Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Sandley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. It's good to be in an off week. I know that's the case for the team and coaches and players, but it's good for us too. I welcome it.
I don't think there's any question about that. So, Adam, obviously just an incredible environment on Saturday at Neyland Stadium, college game day there. And the most important thing, the Vols get the win against Florida. Got a little hairy at the end. But what do you think that game and that win mean for Josh Heupel and this program already here in year two with him?
Well, I mean, it's a step that had to be taken. You know, to go from, let's say, seven wins last year to eight this year, if it did not include a win over Florida, there would be sort of an asterisk. Even if it went to nine, I think you would have that. It would be, yeah, but they still can't beat Florida. So to get past that, I think just opens up a whole lot of doors for Tennessee. I mean, you know, suddenly I think rather than saying this team can be maybe better than last year, it's that they can be better than last year and then better than just about anybody else in the conference aside from Alabama, Georgia. It is funny how I've seen Tennessee fans react to this game now. The vast majority of emails and tweets and conversations I've had with fans this week have been critical, finding, you know, sort of nitpicking Tennessee now of, well, the secondary isn't good enough and the pass rush isn't good enough and that run game's got to be a little better. And the way that I've sort of interpreted that is they suddenly see this as a even more special year than they thought it could be. You know, it's sort of like, you know, Alabama fans will look at a win and say, yeah, we got to get our tight ends better, though, or we're not going to beat Georgia. You know, that outside linebacker's got to be shored up, or we're not going to win a national championship. That's how Tennessee fans are now looking at this, of, hey, we've got Hendon Hooker this year. We're a top-10 team. We got a chance to really, really make a run. And it's you can't do that unless you get this sort of thing fixed. I think people have transitioned more to sort of that next step. It's an overreaction, but I think a little bit earned after last week's game.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, Adam, because on my column I wrote out the game, there was a lot of like, what about not playing to win at the end and this and that? I'm like, God, that's quite a bit of complaining for a fan base that should just be euphoric about, you know, finally beating Florida. But obviously,
Joe, you can't get into the CFP. You can't get into the playoff if you don't manage the clock.
That is true.
That's right. That is a good point.
You're not beating Ohio State in the national title game unless you can figure this stuff out, guys. I mean, let's figure this out. Well, let me ask you on that. You know, what is the because you just mentioned 8-9. I mean, I look at this schedule and I absolutely think this team can go 10-2. And then there's some debate. I don't know if you weren't really in, like Ubbin and I were kind of talking about this, you know, the other day on the whole, like, can they give Alabama a game? Like, what is the – for Adam Sparks at this point, after watching this team so far, what do you believe is the ceiling for this team?
Well, I mean, LSU for me is still a toss-up. I know the early kickoff is probably advantageous for Tennessee, and LSU is still trying to figure things out. The bye week will help Tennessee get healthier. You know, I was at the 8-4 level coming into the season. I'm more at the 9-3 now. 10-2 is certainly plausible. I think 9-3 is reasonable. 10-2 is plausible. You know, the things that would keep them from being 10-2, obviously they could lose at LSU. That defense could cost them somewhere down the line. I mean, I think South Carolina is very, very flawed. But if you get into a shootout with another team and maybe your offense just doesn't completely have it that day. I mean, think about the Vanderbilt game last year. Hendon Hooker wasn't great. The offense wasn't good. If Vandy had an offense that day, that's a competitive game. Think about maybe Spencer Rattler figures it out. Maybe Missouri has a good day. They could lose to Kentucky. I mean, we forget Kentucky is Kentucky thinks they've got a path to the playoff, and you don't want to discount that game. So think 9-3 is reasonable now, where 8-4 was before. You know, to beat Alabama, I mean, I think what Tennessee looks like now is what they looked like in the Alabama game last year. I think that's maybe their ceiling. Remember, the game last year was Tennessee scored, Alabama scored, Tennessee scored, Alabama scored, and then you got to the fourth quarter, and then Alabama ran away with it for, you know, a lopsided win that was actually close for you know, into the fourth quarter. And I think that's what Tennessee looked like to me the other day. They looked like a team that can score on absolutely anybody in college football, including Georgia and Alabama. But they probably can't stop anybody in the conference, aside from a couple.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Adam, you laid out, you know, what Hendon Hooker has done over his time as starting quarterback on Twitter yesterday. And I thought Saturday's game was maybe the best game that I've ever seen Hendon Hooker play. Do you think he belongs in the Heisman Trophy conversation? I know it's very early and there's still a long way to go, but do you think that he belongs in that discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Heisman voter. If we had to turn in our ballot at the end of September, yeah, he's on mine. If we turn it in at the end of October, that's maybe a different story. Turn it in at the end of November, that's probably even more of a different story. I mean, the way in the modern age that you really, really get to New York, and I'm not talking about winning the Heisman, but I'm talking about being a finalist, a top five or whatever. The way you do that is you have great stats. Your team is in the hunt for a national title, maybe a playoff appearance at least, and you have a so-called Heisman moment. Well, I think he's going to have. I mean, he's going to have the stats. He's leads the SEC in passer rating and total offense right now. That's not going to drop off much if it does at all. He's going to have the stats, but the other two categories, Tennessee would probably have to beat Alabama or Georgia. Or he would have to play phenomenally in those two games and lose close ones. There's a path to get there, but the thing is, you know, people think about like Kenny Pickett last year. He had great numbers, and they won their conference and all that. But and he deserved that. But Kenny Pickett at Pitt had like three games to define that. Tennessee plays, you know, six or seven of those level games, and two of them are against Alabama and Georgia. It's just he's got to be really good every week, and he's got to be great against the top two teams in the country, and that's asking a lot. But if he does that, sure, he could be in the conversation in December.
Yeah, well, and that's a key point, I think, is I think you're probably right. Like, you really want to talk about winning the Heisman, he probably has to win at least one of those games, but you can't ask for more opportunity, right? I mean, you get to play those two of the top three teams in the country, and I think you're right that if he was incredible in close losses that were just attributed to the defense, it actually could get interesting, although C.J. Stroud's probably going to throw for like 8,000 yards this year, so, you know, that's how things go. Adam, on the other side of the ball, I mean, I agree with you. You know, like this defense just doesn't look like, you know, it can get stops against the best offenses it plays. And I did think that Anthony Richardson doesn't get enough credit for just being spectacular the other day. Like, he performed spectacularly, but corner issues, you know, Burrell's out. All of a sudden, Tennessee fans love Warren Burrell because, you know, he's out of the game. But, yeah, you know, he has not been great when he was in there. Kamal Haddon gets the late pick, but he had some issues. The secondary, what's the move there? What's the best that could be, and what would you do if you had everybody available in that secondary if you were Banks?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think they can only make incremental progress. It's not like there's a shutdown corner on that team that they can put out on the field. They've got young guys that will play better as the season gets later in the season. Christian Charles moved from safety to corner. He'll get incrementally better over the year, I think. Kamal Haddon is starting for the first time. He gets burned or he gets a pick. And if you can have him get burned less and have him make more plays, he could get incrementally better. I think the step forward for that secondary, as they were last year, are going to be very, very small steps, and they'll be a little better at this. When they're playing worse opponents, by the way, in November than they are now, but I don't think there's an easy fix. I mean, And I don't think, I mean, they were bad in the secondary. I don't think they're as terrible as we think they are. I think there's so many elements that we can't measure. Yesterday at the Knoxville Quarterback Club, Tim Bank, the DC, said, you know, I don't look at stats. Stats don't tell the whole story. That's sort of what he needs to say. But there's a little kernel of truth to that. We've got to think about the fact that Tennessee is almost always last under Josh Heupel in time of possession, which means, you know, normal teams, they get a stop, and then they go and sit for, you know, 6-7 minutes. And then, okay, guys, do it again. And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. Tennessee's batting average is not going to be good on defense just because they're out there. If they finally get a stop, you're going to go sit for 2 minutes, and then you're back in that stressful situation. And the number of possessions they have to face, I think it makes those failures even more glaring. So, or you would think at the end of a game with a subpar defense, you'd say, wow, that made 3 or 4 bad drives. Tennessee's is 6 or 7 bad drives because their offense is putting them back on the field so quickly for good reason, but that's just sort of the stress you're going to deal with when you're a defensive coordinator on a Josh Heupel coach team.
Adam Sparks, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff as always. Enjoy this off week. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Absolutely. You as well. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Vols, 615-737-1025, including, I'm throwing out the question to Joe Rexroad and the listeners. Are the Vols officially back? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
What team out there we should be talking about and paying attention to that we're not?
I think it's Tennessee, Keisha. I'm sure you've seen the team. I mean,
Paul, yeah. Hooker, that quarterback, man, he might be the best quarterback in college football. I mean, that dude
and
is crazy.
The problem, I agree. They beat Florida the other day. It was a sloppy win in the end, and I don't think they got the credit because Florida has been devalued. But they had lost 16 out of 17 to the Gators. So in on Rocky Top, that's a big deal. And I know Lance Leopold's getting a lot of attention, and he deserves it at Kansas. But when you look at the 2-year job that Josh Heupel has done, it's hard to find anyone who's done better. I mean, he inherited a program that was an absolute disaster. It looked like they were about to throw away the key and put Tennessee out of business after Jeremy Pruitt ran it into the wall. But fortunately for Tennessee, Heupel has really steadied it, and he's a much better coach than a lot of people gave him credit for. He was at UCF. He replaced Scott Frost there, and he didn't get very much credit because the program slipped a little bit. But he's been unbelievable. His offense is as fun to watch as any in the entire country.
That was Paul Feinbaum and Keyshawn Johnson discussing Hendon Hooker and the Tennessee Vols. Thanks to Adam Sparks for joining us in the last segment. Joe, this has been brought up before. Philip Fulmer famously brought it up a couple of years ago, saying the Vols are back, and they're getting ready to take a bite out of everybody. It's not the first time this discussion has happened, but I'm gonna throw it out there to you anyway. Vols are 4-0. They're number 8 in the AP poll, top 10 team. Got a big matchup with LSU coming up, not this week, but next week, and then Alabama right around the corner after that. Things are going really well on the field. They've got potentially a Heisman candidate at quarterback. Off the field, recruiting going very well for Tennessee so far. A lot of positivity for Tennessee football. Quite frankly, a level of positivity that we've not seen very often over the course of the last 15 years with the Vols. And my question to you is very simple. Are the Tennessee Volunteers officially back as a football program? Joe Rexroad, what say you?
Again, I like the fact that you as a Tennessee Vols lifelong fan are willing to even put that into the air, give that any oxygen. I'm impressed, man.
I'm going there.
I'm impressed.
Throwing it out there.
Well, my answer is, I guess I'll say the same answer from earlier. Yes-ish. They are back in terms of they're respectable. They're good. They have the future looks good. You know, let's go back to – so the last time they were here is 16, right? And you know, they're top 10, they're undefeated, they beat Florida, they go to Georgia and really, again, this is a 6-6 Kirby Smart's first team that lost at home to Vanderbilt, and a team that Tennessee should have handled, and really they kind of got their butts kicked that day and had a terrible defensive gaffe to let Jacob Eason hit them with what should have been the winning touchdown pass.
Great throw by Eason.
It was, yeah, but like that, and even like that season, like they had to go to overtime to beat App State. All due respect to App State, they deserve a lot of respect. But even at that point, with what had happened the year before against Oklahoma and Florida, there was like this. There was kind of an undercurrent, like, okay, Butch does have them here. Look how well he recruited. They're good, but God, do you trust Butch? And there's no undercurrent right now with Heupel. Now, granted, he's also 17 games in. He's 11-6. So it's still early for there to be that. You know, Butch at that point was in his fourth season. So but I go back again. The other day I went back 6 years. Like, how is it different? How is it the same? I think this is the best Tennessee fans should feel about their football program. I mean, I could honestly go back to when you thought Lane Kiffin was going to stick around, because Lane Kiffin was going to do some cruton. He was doing some cruton. He had a good staff. He was doing all kinds of acquisition of talent. But
program may have gotten the death penalty at some point. But yeah, he was going to do some cruton.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah. No one cares. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But I could go back to that. I could go back to Lane Kiffin first year, all the controversy, just getting people all riled up and just like, wow, this guy could be, you know, I mean, I think at that point you can tell me better. I think people looked at him like, is this our Steve Spurrier? Right. Kind of thing. Now Spurrier's tenure also was a schematic edge he had on people for a lot of years, but that kind of idea, the guy's going to piss everybody off and go out there and just, I don't give a crap. I'm gonna beat you. And then, of course, USC steals him away. And I'm sure Lane still regrets that whole thing. But I could go back 13 years and say you could feel as good about the program as then. But then again, that's probably dismissing some of the moments with Butch, especially when you have like back-to-back classes, number 4 and number 7 in the country, right?
Yeah.
And it's probably being a little bit too dismissive of the early stages of Butch before we realize that he just wasn't going to work out.
Well, I mean, I think back to 2016, they were 5-0. They were undefeated. They beat Florida. They beat Georgia on the Hail Mary. They were a top 10 team in the country. And then, you know, you lose to A&M, you get crushed by Alabama, and then just some brutal losses to South Carolina and Vanderbilt that year. Like, when they were 5-0, we were having the same discussion of, are the Vols back? Like, is this it? Like, do they have a chance to not only win the SEC East, like, do they have a chance to compete for a national title? That was the question that some were throwing around that year. Now, and I don't know if I never ever really bought into the national title part of it, but the SEC East, they were the favorite in the division that year. Like, they absolutely should have gone to Atlanta that year. So it's not like it's a total, you know, new discussion since 2007 was the last time they actually got to Atlanta. Like, 2016, there's a lot of positivity around the program, and it evaporated very quickly. So I'm not saying that can't happen as they move forward here, but I'll say this. I said this earlier, and some people push back on it. They've got the best quarterback they've had since Peyton Manning in their program, and I don't know that it's all that close. Like, I know the game is different now. Like, people got mad at me for leaving out T. Martin, and you know, Casey Clawson was a good quarterback for Tennessee. Eric Ainge had his moments where he was good. You know, they've had some good quarterbacks. Josh Dobbs was very good. You know, he's probably the next guy you'd put in that discussion. But yeah, Hendon Hooker is the best quarterback they've had since Peyton Manning. And that's made a big difference with this group. And, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't care too much about the Heisman stuff in September. There's a lot of September Heismans that have been won, especially at the University of Michigan over the years. So, I mean, that's – I don't put a whole lot of stock into that discussion. But to me, this Vols team is not they're not going to win a national championship. They're not going to the college football playoff. I still think there's a significant gap between them and Georgia and them and Alabama. But I'll say this. I think Tennessee is definitely back from the standpoint of they are relevant again in college football. And for a while, they weren't. They were not relevant in college football. The fan base is fully bought in. The recruiting is going really well. And you can, I think as you start to look forward, you can see that Josh Heupel's building something, I think, that has the chance to be pretty special here with Tennessee. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that you're getting to a national title game anytime soon. But I think he has done a phenomenal job thus far.
Well, I agree, and I think those Feinbaum comments are – I mean, those are very spot on, and they were strong comments. One thing this makes me think of is my column that day from Athens in 2016, which absolutely I know had the line, like, they are going to Atlanta. Like, it was over. Because the thing is, like, they even losing the next two games, they were like, there's no other loss that should be on the schedule.
Yeah.
And of course, we know how that turned out. And by the way, also on Hooker, real quick, he is fifth in the Athletic Straw Poll Heisman, just behind Jalen Daniels, Bryce Young, Brock Bowers, all very close. CJ Stroud, by far the number one guy. But Hooker got two first place votes, 4 seconds, 7 thirds. So the September Heisman is he's in there for it. But look, I agree with everything you said there. Relevant. That really is what it is, right? It's you're relevant. I mean, you're in the top 10 and you have a chance to keep winning too. I mean, you're going to get your shot against probably the top two team or two of the top three teams in college football. I don't know how that's going to go, but you got a chance to win the other ones and be on the biggest stage you've been on for a postseason game since that SEC title game. So that's big. And also, when you talk about Heupel building things, I know we have to go to break, but what he's doing this year in a couple years means you're gearing up to make a playoff run. You're gearing up to get in the playoffs. And I think Tennessee's positioned to have a regular shot at that. Now, we'll see if they can get themselves up to that top tier. You know, that's still distant. Kind of. I mean, it's still distant. But you get great quarterbacks coming in here, and you keep building like this, and you're going to be in the tournament, and that's really what it's going to be about. It's either you're in that thing or you're not. You're relevant or you're not.
Well, throwing the question out there to Tennessee fans, are the Vols back? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. More of that coming up next. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Monell's, with two locations in Nashville. Enjoy Monell's Southern comforts, like their world-famous skillet fried chicken, while spending time with family and friends. Get half off a $50 gift card to Monell's right now at thegamenashville.com/deals. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
The Vols are back. And before long, we'll be taking a bite out of everybody we play's ass. Thank you very much.
Oh, just a beauty. A classic from a couple of years ago from Philip Fulmer. It's been said before, Joe Rexroad, the Vols are back. The question we're asking now, is it real? Are the Vols actually back this time? By the way, one of my favorite pieces of audio of all time. I played it on repeat. Especially given what happened after that clip about 7 months later. You gave Jeremy Pruitt a contract extension, and then they were total cheeks the whole year on the field. It was good stuff.
Yeah. You know, I feel like if they end up going 6-6 this year, we should just go back and just play this whole stretch and just put it on a loop.
Just keep going.
Oh, but yeah, it has been said before. So some people are like, on the text line, they're not back, you know, until they beat Alabama. Now, you may be waiting a while. I think you can be back. I guess it depends on your definition. It's just like when we define, you know, who's a better program, Kentucky or Tennessee? It depends on how you define program. But back to me, I think you can be back without beating Alabama.
I mean, is it possible for the Vols to be back without winning a national championship? I would say yeah.
Right. Which basically is what you get if you beat Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
Yeah. So, you're in position.
You're certainly in position. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts from Tennessee fans on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate on the text line says, I need to see the Vols do more to consider them back. Will they have a letdown at LSU? Then what happens when Bama comes to town? If they convincingly beat LSU and hang with Bama till at least the fourth quarter, then I will consider the Vols could be back. This is from Nate on the text line.
Okay. They'd be more back if they do that.
Well, let me just go ahead and throw this out to you. They finish this off this year. They go 10-2 with close losses to Alabama and Georgia. They back?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Alabama and Georgia are maybe the top two programs in the entire country.
Yeah, look, unless the question of are they back is someone sitting there on 1998 saying, this is back, winning the freaking thing. Well, okay, then no. But yes, I mean, to me, what immediately comes to mind, I think you hit the right word, which is relevance. They're always relevant, like for us and in this state, because they're the most popular sports team in this state, you know, but relevant nationally, not a butt of jokes nationally. I mean, that alone has changed in less than 2 years. And man, I mean, it was almost to the point of running out of jokes. How many hamburger jokes can you make in January of 2021, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, there's been a dramatic reversal already. But, yes, that scenario you laid out, I think by most definitions, clearly that would mean they're back.
It's pretty incredible the more that you look at this. And we heard Feinbaum talk about it in that clip we played last segment. Like the job that Josh Heupel has done rebuilding the program to a certain degree, like there is a mass exodus when Jeremy Pruitt leaves. You've got all the scholarship limitations, everything that went along with it. I mean, the fact that we're sitting here today and they're the number 8 team in the country and they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the nation, it's a pretty good credit to Josh Heupel. And then you factor in recruiting as well and how well that's going. Like, he has done a sensational job. And, you know, I don't know the backstory of every coach in the country, and I don't know if what Feinbaum said in the last segment is accurate from the standpoint of, you know, it's hard to find somebody that's done a better job in 2 years than Josh Heupel has done. I don't know. Like, I'd have to sort through all of them, but I know this. He's done a pretty darn good job, and the season's not over. They got some big tests that are coming up on their schedule, but it's pretty clear that this is a well-run, well-organized, well-coached football team, and that's not always been the case for Tennessee. He's done a marvelous job.
He has. Now, something pops into my head here as a bit of a cautionary tale. In terms of a guy who, well, frankly, Philip Fulmer absolutely should have hired instead of Jeremy Pruitt. You know, Michigan State is about to go about 5-7 this year. Okay, and they won. Yeah, they won 10 games. I think Mel Tucker is a good coach. They've recruited extremely well. They won 10 games and won the Peach Bowl last year. They got to that New Year's Six Bowl, and you know, you lose some talent. Not even at quarterback. They have the quarterback back. You lose some talent. You know, you're still in a position. Most of these programs not named Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, you can still have that dip year and kind of have ups and downs. And if Tennessee next year, yes, I'm going to bring up Joe Milton. You know, Tennessee next year loses Hendon Hooker. I do think that Joe Milton is going to be in position to be a good quarterback next year for them. I know some people think Nico coming right in as a true freshman, and maybe. But there's a competition there, and I would still include Taven Jackson there too. But you don't know once Hooker leaves next year. Does that mean 2-3 more losses, and all of a sudden all this, oh, the Vols are back, huh? Ah, they went 7-5. They could absolutely be like a 7-5 team next year. So, yeah, you know, it doesn't mean – like, you can't just automatically expect this to just stay on the same trajectory, right?
Let's make one thing clear. I think it's fine and well-deserved to be excited about the quarterback situation moving forward, like whether that be Joe Milton or Nico when he comes in. Like, there's a lot of excitement there, and I get that. I'll say this, in terms of just college football, and I'm not talking about what sort of NFL prospects they are, but just college football, it's going to be pretty difficult for a Joe Milton or a Nico to play a whole lot better than Hendon Hooker's played these last 2 years.
Exactly. Like,
it's been pretty darn good.
No, he's been tremendous. And like to your point on best quarterback since Peyton, I bet you a lot of those quarterbacks you named would answer you and be like, could I play in this offense, please? Let's see how I do. And that's fair. Like, honestly, I mean, I'd like to see Joshua Dobbs in this scheme. I mean, he'd probably do pretty well. But the difference between Dobbs and Hooker to me is that Hooker's precision and accuracy is just more reliable on a you know, series by series, game by game, throw by throw basis. And that's, and honestly, as good a runner as Josh Dobbs was, Hooker's better. I mean, he's just so he. It's just one of these. It's an incredible story when you think about Hooker comes here, signs up to play for Pruitt, you know, from Virginia Tech, and at that point, it's like, okay, yeah, he was okay at Virginia Tech. Heupel comes in, brings in his guy, who's going to be the quarterback, Joe Milton, and it turns out that it's Hooker and Heupel having this incredible partnership with Alex Golish and all those guys. Hazel, I mean, they deserve a ton of credit. You can't necessarily count on that just continuing. You know, this is a special season potentially, and a special two year sample size of this quarterback just playing incredible football. You can't necessarily count on that. And I do think long term, they're going to attract quarterbacks to play in this offense. Like they're going to put them in position to be really good. And that's the long-term big picture is very good. You know, could be some short-term bumps.
Well, I think, and tell me if you disagree, I think I've seen enough out of Heupel and Golish calling offensive plays in their system at this point to feel pretty comfortable about, like, scheme-wise, they're going to have a good offense. Like they know how to scheme people open, and they know how to design an offense that can move the ball. So like, I'm not trying to take anything away from Hendon Hooker. He's been fantastic, but Josh Heupel and Alex Golish, like I talked about it yesterday. Like everybody's like, well, you know, Brew McCoy was running wide open 70 yards down the field and Jacob Warren was wide open. Well, it sure seems like Tennessee's got a whole lot of wide open guys every week. Like that to me is on coaching. And I think they have proven to be excellent, X's and O's wise offensively. Excellent.
No doubt. I mean, some of it is the fact that they can coach their players to go as fast as they do, not get tired, and not make, you know, have false starts or lining up wrong. That's impressive. So sometimes it's just the scheme itself creates those problems for defenses, but also play calls, design, game plans. There's no question. These guys are very good at it. And, I mean, shoot, man, with Heupel, you're going back to, you know, Mike Leach as the guy who recruited him to Oklahoma, and the air raid going back 20 plus years and years of that, and then Briles system and all these things. But being able to get a team to like snap your fingers and execute like this, there's no way that's easy.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll give some quick thoughts on the Predators and their preseason games from last night. Also, take a look. Our first look at the Titans and the Colts as well. That's coming up next. But first, Michelle has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, I do, Robbie. From Nashville to Knoxville and all around the country, Superbook Sports is your place to wager this football season. And you don't have to be at the game to enjoy football this fall. Download the Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com and start placing your bets now. And right now, Superbook has a lot of futures options. So if you want to take a look at the lines for every pro football game for the rest of the season, plus which team will win the title, I still love the Buffalo Bills, even though they lost last weekend. And as far as MVP, Lamar Jackson is looking great and he's doing great in fantasy. And who will surprise in the SEC? We've been talking about the Vols. Wager on all that and more right now at Superbooks, along with football. Superbooks also accepts wagers on every other major sport. So bring Vegas to the palm of your hands, and now Superbook will match 100% of your first bet up to $1,000, no matter if the bet wins or loses. Get in on the action right now with Superbook Sports. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.
Tune 1025-1063 the game this Sunday following the Titans game for the NFL postgame with Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow live from the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. Postgame show brought to you by Renter's Warehouse, Two Rivers Ford. Custom order your new Ford from Two Rivers Ford and Superbook Sports. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning. Joe, before we look ahead to Titans and Colts, some quick thoughts from the Preds last night, their first two games of the preseason. Two different results. They lose the first one 4-3 in overtime, right as time expires at the buzzer, and they win the second one. A little bit more of an NHL-heavy roster in the second one, 4-0 last night against Florida. Just some main takeaways from the two games. Number one, my biggest takeaway, Ryan McDonagh and Matisse Ekholm paired together. McDonough's on the left. They got Ekholm playing on the right. They looked pretty darn good together. And if those two guys are still the same level of player that they've been throughout their career defensively, that's got a chance to be a pretty good shutdown pair for the Predators. I don't think they've settled in on that yet, as that being officially the pairing, but they have settled in on Matisse Ekholm playing on the right. He's going to do that throughout camp and throughout the preseason. You'll probably see him with Josi for a game at some point coming up here just to give that a look and see what it looks like. But I will say, Joe, McDonagh, Ekholm looked pretty darn good together last night.
Yeah, well, that's a great sign. And obviously it's something that Hines said, you know, recently, you know, they talked about it a while ago. This is something that's been in the plans, been in the discussion. And that sounds like a pretty, like you said, I mean, going into every year, you know what players have been. You don't know exactly what they will be in the season to come. And those guys have logged a lot of miles in this league, but they should still have good years left. And that's a really intriguing shutdown pairing potentially. A
couple other things that stand out. By the way, no Mikael Granlund last night, no Roman Josi, no Juuse Saros. So it's not, kind of some different pairings and shufflings around of the lines from that point. Backup goalie continues to be a battle. Askarov looked pretty darn good yesterday. He and Kevin Lankinen, who they brought in from Chicago this offseason, combined for the shutout in the 4-0 win. Connor Ingram started the first game, let in a pretty bad goal on one of them. Other than that, I thought he was pretty solid. And Devin Cooley came in relief and looked pretty good as well. So backup goalie going to be interesting to monitor as they move forward here as well. Niederreiter, Johansson, and Tomasino, which was a line that I think a lot of us speculated could be something they took a look at. They took a look at it yesterday, in the words of Ryan Johansson, got a little bit of work to do. Said that they were sloppy out there. They did get a goal in that game in the third period. But I'm interested to see. I like the makeup of that line as they continue to work together as the season begins, if that's the way they choose to go. Interested to see how that plays out. But the backup goalie thing, I'll say this. I think he's going to start the season in Milwaukee and he's going to play a lot. But Askarov looks pretty good out there.
Yeah. I'm already in my little crystal ball looking at the fall of 2023 when Askarov is Juuse Saros of 2016.
Yeah.
Juuse Saros is Pekka Rinne of 2016, and which of course means the Preds Stanley Cup Finals 2024, by the way.
Yeah.
But honestly, I just all the buzz about him and even just some of the plays he makes, I don't know. I don't think it's crazy to think that next year he could be a full-time NHL goalie. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a little.
He's looked pretty darn good. So I am interested to see what happens the rest of this week. Obviously, Hurricane Ian down in the Gulf of Mexico right now. So the Predators were supposed to go down to Tampa to play on Thursday. That is not going to happen. They're not going down there. And they're scheduled to play here Friday. There's a chance that they could play both of those games here at Bridgestone Arena. That has not been confirmed yet. I don't know what's going to happen there, but be on the lookout for that this week. Going to be an interesting situation with Tampa with the hurricane coming up. So something to monitor there. Joe, quickly, as we look ahead, and we'll do this more tomorrow as we kind of begin our week of looking at the Indy game, just your first thoughts, your first impressions of this matchup for the Titans. It's been an underwhelming start to the season for both of these teams, but to me, that doesn't make the game any less big coming up on Sunday. This is a huge one for the Titans against the Colts.
No doubt, and pretty wild that they could win a fourth straight in Indy. I think one thing that is going to be massive, and you know, starting tomorrow, is tracking on both sides inside linebacker. Zach Cunningham hasn't been great this year, but boy, do the Titans need him in this game against that offense, which should be focusing, you know, and highlighting Jonathan Taylor, and then Shaq Leonard. Actually, I'm already used to calling him Shaq. I'm cool with it.
I'm glad you are.
I mean, I'm fine with it. Like, Shaquille is
I'm
much
cool with it. I'm just not used to it.
Yeah. I don't know. It just kind of seems natural. But he's, you know, the Colts last week, they looked like a pretty okay defense against the Chiefs, getting some big-time stops, getting a lot of pressure on Mahomes. So now add Shaq Leonard, who historically, like, with or without him, has been a pretty big difference for the Colts defense. So if he's able to play Sunday, along with what else they obviously found against the Chiefs, for one thing, and I think we could be looking at a kind of a low-scoring game, unfortunately, for folks who like points. But I think those are huge things. And obviously for the Titans, and the same thing, it's the injuries are so important here. I mean, Bud Dupree and Ola Adeniyi, at least one of them coming back. Dupree, way more important, of course. But even having Adeniyi back, I mean, the Titans just started Derek Tuska and then said, see you later, Derek. Thank you for starting. You're gone. And now Mario Edwards is here. And, you know, a guy who there's one of those, you know, name who used to be a good player and he's in the league still, but they need more pass rush. Because if you can get pressure on Matt Ryan, then you are going to get a lot of stops. He does not move very much.
Well,
at all.
He does not. And a big week for Bud Dupree on that front. Obviously, not going to find out anything today, but once practice begins tomorrow, like, can Bud Dupree be out there and be available and start to work for the Titans? Because, you know, the initial kind of reports after the game from Vrabel on that Monday after the Buffalo game was he didn't really fear it being a kind of a long-term thing with Bud Dupree. But what does that mean? Does that mean he's back this week? You know, they need him for this Colts game. It'd be great to have Bud Dupree back out there.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, that's one of those that, like, you need that to be a one-week thing and not a three-week thing, you know, given where this team is right now. And, look, if you can find a way to get to 2-2 Sunday, you basically start over and you're in very good shape.
By the way, we didn't mention this earlier. Congratulations to the Dallas Cowboys last night winning a game. I can already see the quarterback controversy between Dak Prescott and Cooper Rush just coming to fruition before our very eyes. It's going to be great to monitor down there.
You know, we went through this whole show without talking about that god-awful game, and you ruined it, man.
I mean, I didn't watch a single second of that thing last night, but I hear Cooper Rush was pretty good sometimes, kind of.
Yeah, I unfortunately did watch a few seconds of it, and yeah, he did. He looked pretty good. So, yeah.
He had apparently a couple
Jerry
darts.
Jones. Yeah, no, he's not bad. He's a pretty good backup. Nice. Apparently Jerry Jones was crushing bourbon and Fritos after the game.
What a combo. I'm sure he was. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Rope. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.